I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks very much for joining me. This is Like It Is. Today, we resume our Like It Is College series. Our conversation continues with Dr. Jennifer Taylor Mendoza. She's the 13th president of West Valley College and first African-American educator to lead the college. Our topic of discussion is Black leadership.
Dr. Jennifer Taylor Mendoza, president of West Valley College. We're going to talk about your very interesting TED Talk, Black Leaders as an Endangered Species, which we'll also be tagging. Why the topic and what's important about it from your perspective?
Such a great question. I'm trying to figure out where to even. I become more interested as a mentor, in particular to the next generation of leaders in the African-American community. And I talked a little bit about just thinking more about the conditions in which Black leaders in particular are in, you know, put in during times of crisis or in non-times of crisis, but the conditions and for them to have the support to be successful. And the idea came up because one day I was looking at a show on GIS mapping, so geographic information systems mapping, and there was a species that was considered to be endangered, and the environmental scientists at the time were looking at the various factors that contributed to their level of either extinction or being vulnerable or in endangered. And it had to do with just sort of the conditions of it, the environmental conditions. And I kind of gave an example of this in even my TED Talk when I spoke about the Red Mountain rock crust, and that it grew, the soil that it grew in, it thrived in magnesium and nickel-rich soil. I talked about that. But at the same time that this flower was growing, you know, the nickel mining industry was occurring as well. And so this species in particular, it was, I'm actually even forgetting, but this animal, they were doing, talking about the conditions and why it was all of a sudden endangered, whether it was the sort of just the environment or the loss of their current habitat in which they were able to thrive, or, you know, genetically something was happening as well, or even the impact of just humans on that particular species. So I started to think about what were the conditions needed to ensure Black leaders were successful. You know, what are the trends? You know, what are the sort of the, I don't know, the contributors, I guess, factors to that? And then I started to think through a little bit of the work of the Black Reconstruction and all that was happening at that time and what was promised. When you think of not only land ownership for Black folks, but economic prosperity, political representation, all of these things that was so important to the Black Reconstruction, and things that didn't ever come to fruition, or things that we're still hoping that will come to fruition, you know, promises of the Reconstruction. So, you know, at the time, all of these things were just in my head. And I thought to myself, and I was going through my own experiences as a Black leader, being now in my second presidency role and just experiencing some things in my first presidency, that I didn't feel that the environment was too hospitable, and being perfectly prepared to do the work, but also feeling as if the conditions, whether it's because folks, you know, lack the competence or skill set on how to support a Black leader, regardless, the conditions were interesting in regards to my success. And although being very successful in my own right when it came to serving the college community, but experiencing things at a different kind of senior level. So I started to think about what are the conditions for African-American leaders in particular, their success, and how do we create an environment that is hospitable, that restores justice, integrity, and humanity to the workplace, and so that Black leaders in particular can be successful. And it looks across all sectors, right? Not just focusing on education, but examining, you know, Fortune 500 companies just to kind of see what's happening in those environments too. So Yeah, that is kind of how I became interested, really looking at how do we create hospitable habitat. And regardless of someone's skin tone, language that they speak, or environment that they grew up in, how do we ensure that leaders who are naturally born, leaders who are perfectly ready to do this work, how can the environment be situated in a way to support?
You mentioned industry leaders should examine environments and perhaps make the environment somewhat conducive to Black leadership, Black leaders, and all that. So, what would be one or two environmental factors that industry leaders would need to consider addressing to make it a bit more palatable for Black leaders as they enter into new environments?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a couple things that come to mind. I think one that stands out is the opportunity for them to be their authentic self and what that might look like when it comes to terminology, language, behaviors, not the Black leader coming in and how they might even express themselves and communicate in their own style. And one might say, well, that's any leader. Any person's going to have a different sort of communication style or whatnot. But it feels like when it comes to Black leaders, we are under more scrutiny in how we behave and how we communicate, what information or knowledge that we bring to the table. And so I think just the opportunity for leaders to kind of come in authentically and be themselves and not feeling like they're going to be judged or fall in a category or be more scrutinized, I guess, more scrutinized and allow for their environment. African Americans who do improv, you think of jazz and blues and how we navigate. And so improvisation is really important and having an agile mindset. And so just the ability to be authentic and just kind of improv and have improvisation as we navigate these spaces and navigate the work. That's to me is really kind of important to Black leaders' success. I think another thing that comes to mind is environments that's joyful and that there is an opportunity to think about health and wellness and not conducive to a not stressful environment where I'm trying to kind of explain sort of just kind of that's just more it considers not just the work but also things outside of work that are important for someone's health. So taking into fact the consideration that African American women, have higher stress, can be prone to heart attacks and strokes and diabetes. And so can there be opportunities that health is considered when it comes to looking at sort of data on what conditions or medical conditions that African Americans might deal with? And so going a little deeper and having a plan of action to ensure that their health is intact. So those are the couple things that come to mind. So maybe considering the workday and the levels of stress and the to do the work too.
We talked about industry leaders making the environment hospitable. What about those built-in inhospitable environments that Black leaders find themselves working in and under? You mentioned something in your TED talk about that. Would you elaborate a little bit on inhospitable environments for Black leaders and how to perhaps navigate those situations?
Yes, I think, and maybe you can tell me just in regards to exactly just kind of when you were thinking about inhospitable environment.
So the inhospitable environments dealt with, again, cultural norms, culturally being insensitive to cultural differences, indifferent to language, speech, skin color, skin tone, those types of inhospitable environmental factors, even higher hairstyle, how in fact that has been. Some Black leaders have been targeted as a result of their hairstyles, mainly of women, but also dialect challenges and so forth.
Yes, and that I guess that goes back to the just being authentic, right?
Yes.
Yeah, being authentic to one's like culture and one's sort of heritage, and yeah, and yes, I just wanted to and I think that definitely happens a lot when it comes to speech and directness and dialect and all of these. And for me, just the I think the judgment too and the scrutiny as well. And the expectations for Black leaders, especially when it comes to meritocracy too, and who deserves to be in which roles, and what my counterpart, who happens to be, a white person, compared to what I'm accountable for as a Black woman as well. So yeah, that's a great question for me to just kind of think even more thoroughly about.
Well, the other point I thought interesting in your TED talk was that you looked kind of reconstructionary, and you focused on W.E.B. Du Bois's Black Reconstruction, and I found that interesting, and would like to have you elaborate in terms of when you looked at it from a historical standpoint, how the Jim Crow laws hindered African Americans, Blacks, and the competition between American capitalism and slavery. And how that actually is a part of a traditional barrier, a burden, I should say, that Blacks carry, even as Black leaders and individuals to this day.
For yes, for sure. I thought it was, as I think about, I mean, Du Bois, my goodness, the historical narrative that we think about when the Civil War and Reconstruction, there's so many ideas out there about it and different beliefs and some things that are just not true. But I wanted to make sure that we didn't forget about the birth of slavery and obviously the capitalism, right? And the importance of how African Americans were used to fuel the economy, and mistreated, and the extreme, gosh, brutality under Jim Crow and the straight up terror. So I thought that was that talk about the most inhospitable, I mean, right, inhospitable environment. My gosh, just literally being terrorized for being having a certain pigment or features or just being Black. And so I wanted to kind of highlight that, and also though at the same and highlight the fact how Reconstruction failed for sure, because we see the impact of that still today. And we see it even more, you can see it right now nationally, what's happening, my gosh. And also though at the same time highlight allyship. I brought that up too, right?
Yes.
And that there were some of our allies who are white colleagues who are white folks who dare to think to differently and not and not judge based on just despite skin tone. And so yeah, it was important for me to go back to W.B. Du Bois because he did so much, and his writings are so beautiful, and what he's speaking about is so true still today. And it's just, oh my gosh, it's sometimes it's hard to come to terms with as well that we've come so far, but not far enough at all.
Absolutely. Well stated. Well stated. One of the points you raised was how hospitable is the habitat? And I think that's very important. And I saw from what point you were coming at using that. But talk a little bit about the hospitality. How hospitable is the habitat with respect to Black leadership? And again, first time Black leaders who are walking into a habitat that may be completely different. How to navigate that, how to feel welcome, how to be a part of the team, how one is accepted, hospitality, how hospitable is the habitat? Would you talk on that a little bit?
Well, when you think of a habitat being hospitable, that means it provides all the resources you need, right? That the organism needs to survive. So that's food, water, shelter, space, safety. And when you the essential resources to not even just survive, but to thrive. And so a lot of times, whether it's, so I asked myself, well, how hospitable really is this environment? How many microaggressions are you going to experience a day? How many opportunities will it be to sort of undermine or gaslight the individual, right? And so sometimes the conditions are not just physical in the sense of position, maybe where your office is located, but it's mental, right? It's the mental inhospitality that happens a lot as well, and that comes out in the environment, the competition, and certain things that to make an individual feel compromised or just not safe to creatively even, or to have. That's the whole comment of just being how hospital really is the environment. You know, how safe really is it? How nurturing is it? And how do we create environments, success conditions? I called it success conditions, actually. And that's something I've been working on, is looking at a success condition framework for ecosystems, right? So that the environment, people can be conscious of the environment that they create for Black leaders by choosing ethical behaviors that removes kind of negativity and just really unhealthy competition as well. And so I would think of it like negative, toxic behavior that is, competition is good, but not at the cost where it makes someone feel as if there's an inordinate amount of stress associated with that as well. So, and then racism obviously has a lot to do with it, right? When you think of racism and microaggressions and other things that happen to Black leaders, questioning their skill set, you know, I think about, well, how healthy is the habitat? And some of the things that I think leaders can do that are wanting to support Black leaders is provide an opportunity to talk to them to see how they're experiencing things, right? Are they feeling, coming to work joyful, feeling like they're thriving? Do they feel like they're going to work and they're being undermined by their colleagues, right? And so I think a part of the way folks help is to actually have those creative, not creative, crucial conversations, courageous conversations about the workplace and things that might need to be changed. You know, it's kind of similar to back in the day when it was just all a male organization and women weren't actually, you know, considered when it came to even times of meetings. So say you have an all male organization and you have a female in the group and that they have a meeting at 8 o'clock. Well, in most cases, you know, some the women are getting the children ready. So how do you create a condition in which the female can opt in, can be fully engaged, but not at a time where they're taking their children to school, right? And that's, you know, really looking at different roles depending on the sex, but that's kind of an example of how do you create an environment where the female can really engage. So maybe the meeting should be at 10 a.m. and not 8 a.m. So those are sort of the things I think about, the environmental conditions and how does it impact, thinking about how it could negatively impact someone. So yeah, when I said, well, how hospital really is the environment, it was to take into consideration all those things that happen, both that are quite overt and some that are quite covert as well.
I found that interesting in your TED Talk audience, and you wanted to just take a snapshot by show of hands to the question, are Black leaders' population declining or increasing? Yeah. Were you surprised by the hands that went up for declining as those that went up for increasing?
Nope. No. I think when I looked at it, I was looking at the film, most of them said declining.
Yes.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's sad. But I think others see, you know, yeah, I mean, it's quite sad. But I do think others recognize and see the biases when it comes to race, gender, and ability, for sure. And they see it across different sectors. And in the room, that was interesting because in the room, you know, you had folks from the corporate world, you had individuals, you know, from health, the healthcare fields and education. It was completely diverse, the audience, those very well-resourced, those, you know, who are just, you know, obviously doing well, but just making it. And so it was just a diverse audience and they've all seen it. And it's, you know, highlighted right now in our nation too. But yeah, it was unfortunate, but it was accurate. It was an accurate reflection of what's happening when it comes to Black leadership.
And on your slide presentation, you had three words, many words, but three words, integrity, yeah, justice, humanity. Yeah. Would you speak a bit about those words and why you use that particular post?
Yeah. Well, I think justice has to go back to just like, how do we make sure, how do we treat everyone fairly, right? And equally and give them what is due theirs. You know, justice having to do with law and ethics and, you know, the checks and balances, and making sure that there's process and due process, and people are, have consequences for their actions. And so just justice, giving, you know, making sure that justice to me just prevails. It allows for rehabilitation, restorative justice, to repair what was caused, the harm that was caused, right? So that's what I think about restorative justice and reconciliation. I think integrity right now is crucial, and we see a lack of integrity, and the qualities of just, you know, having moral principles and being honest. And I think Cory Booker said it best. It's not about conservatism, liberalism, Democrat, Republican. It's about right or wrong, point blank. Right or wrong. And then what are our values around integrity, respect and responsibility and trust and fairness? And so I think leading with integrity is really, really significant and important in how we go about creating these hospitable environments. And then the last one, I want to make sure I heard you right. So you said integrity, you said
Justice
and then and
humanity.
Yeah, humanity. Yeah, that's what I thought. I wanted to make sure I heard that correct. Yes, and remembering humanity, I mean, it just says that the common good, right? How do we make sure that we don't forget the human condition, just the quality of acting humane and being humane and treating each other with dignity and respect? It's just so lacking right now. It's not there. And it's our very virtue of human love and compassion towards each other. And it's just not there. And it's sad. It's saddening. And so I think that's one way how we can create a hospital environment. You actually have to care about other folks. You have to care about other people's feelings and have empathy and, you know, understanding and around it too. And so I think we lack understanding. And when we go back to concepts of liberalism, actually, I was just talking about this at a keynote about liberalism. Liberalism talks about being able to accept ideas other than your own and having, you know, being able to just have compassion and not have the ego surrounding just being so stuck and stagnant. So yeah, and the freedoms that come from liberalisms, right? And the opportunity to be courageous and how you advocate. So I just feel like liberalism can also be attached to this sort of humanity, justice, and integrity too.
Yes. And as we run close to the end of our interesting session here, just want to get your thoughts on Cindy Suarez. Is she lists three or four points here about characteristics of Black leadership, key characteristics of Black leadership experience. She says, one, that the fact that Black leaders tend to get appointed in times of crisis, would you see that as a pro or con type of position point, if you just had to take a stab at that?
You know, I think, oh gosh, that's interesting. Times of crisis. And now that I think back, there was another article that talked about this. Was this The Perils of Black Leadership?
Yes.
Okay. So I did read this one. Yes. There's some truth to it, and it's not necessarily a bad thing as well, because I think that was a question, right? Is this a good thing or is it a bad
yes.
thing? And because it also goes back to sort of what even happened, oh my goodness, to the wonderful Harvard president who was brought in. And so it's this concept around, am I bringing brought in only to be set up? Well, I'm not sure exactly, Cindy, how she took it. This is how I took it.
Sure.
But you come in times of crisis and you're not able to deal with it, or there's stress. And then Claudine Gay, right? It's almost that she was promoted. Oh my goodness. It's not the glass ceiling, but the glass, what do you call it? Not tower, the glass cliff. The cliff.
Cliff. Yes,
the cliff.
Glass.
There
cliff.
You go.
Yes.
Yeah. The cliff, the glass cliff. And so this concept, so there could be an opportunity if you have a support system. And like, I think of all the Black leaders who came during COVID or even during the George Floyd murder or other incidents that have happened, a financial crisis or some sort of like really reputational risk sort of thing that happened. Yeah, if you have a support network, it could be a great thing. But if you don't, it is like a glass cliff and you're getting pushed over. So I completely understood that point. And it just depends on the situation. It could be, once again, a positive thing depending on the support structure.
Well stated. Second point that Black leaders tend to be prepared for these opportunities. Crisis, Black is appointed. They use their experiences in various environments, and they pull the institution or the organization forward. So it could be a good asset, a good promotion or situation for an organization. Yes?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And I talked about that in a TED Talk. I think most Black leaders are ready, prepared, and ready to do the work that they need to do. And I think sometimes that's threatening in itself when they do see that you're prepared and ready to go. And I can definitely attest to this. There's a level of insecurity that might come, especially if you're a leader that it seemed to be just mediocre. But absolutely, I think mostly they are prepared and ready to go and to thrive as well.
Number three, that their authority is overwhelmingly contested.
Yes. And I laugh because it's so true. I talked about that earlier. Yes.
And the fourth point.
Yes.
And that a core part of their work is managing the negative effect to which they are subject.
Yep. Absolutely. I would agree. And it's so, from the, I talked about the microaggressions, the gaslighting, the undermining, the threat itself. It's just so interesting, the power of a Black leader and how the impact it could have on someone who is just what I would call these fake leaders. It's the best way for me to say it. You know, folks who are in position of powers because they got there not based on merit, which is oddly being so questioned today when it comes to Black leaders being qualified or not qualified, right? In itself, which is interesting to consider. So,
I have just loved this conversation and I look forward to many others. And thank you so much for your very candid, straightforward, and informative time and conversation.
Thank you.
My guest today was Dr. Jennifer Taylor Mendoza, president of West Valley College in Sarasota, California. I'll continue my college series at West Valley in 7 days. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.